Amazing stories of what Jesus is still doing in people's lives. And this evening we're hearing three more, and we're going to think about how we know that he is still alive and he is indeed still at work. Mervyn's, my friend over here, is going to be telling us a little bit of his story. Mervyn, before I hand over to you, tell us a little bit about where you live, how long you've been here, family, that sort of thing.
Well, I moved down to Crowborough with my wife nearly 5 years ago now. We came down from Purley. We joined a daughter and son who were all already down here, leaving the third son back up there. And we have six grandchildren.
Wow. I'm not quite there yet. now, Mervyn...
Surprises me.
Mervyn's chosen to... really, to tell you his story, whereas I'll interview Trish and Tom a bit later on. So, Mervyn, over to you. We're very keen to hear from you, what you've been doing.
Thank you. I've done this because I tend to move off on tangents, if I'm allowed to give free rein. I'm the third of four boys and was born when the family was living in North London. After my two elder brothers were born, I was supposed to be a girl. And following this disappointment, my parents tried again for a girl, and along came the younger brother. They gave up trying after that. My parents had no interest in anything religious, so we didn't attend church as a family. But along with my brothers, we joined the local scouts and attended church parade once a month, which actually I didn't mind doing. But in my teens, I was so ignorant of the Anglican faith that when a friend from Scouts mentioned he was attending confirmation classes because there were girls going, I didn't know what he meant. And by confirmation classes, I mean, I knew about girls. After graduating in civil and structural engineering at university, I continued working in scouting in leadership roles. And despite not being a churchgoer myself, I encouraged the scouts in a new troop I started whilst working in Yorkshire to attend monthly church parades, as I felt this had been a valuable part of my teenage years. A few years after I returned from Yorkshire, I stopped being involved in scouting and again no longer attended church. One evening, a couple of Mormons knocked on my door and we started weekly sessions where they introduced me to their faith. Some of what they said, however, didn't ring true with me. So one evening I telephoned a friend, as I knew he and his wife were Christians. They confirmed my suspicion that I ought to avoid further contact with the Mormon church, but I still didn't go any further with Christianity at that stage. Then one evening, while I was still at work, members of the local Purley Baptist Church paid Sandy a visit whilst knocking door to door. And for a couple of visits after that, I left her to it. She was invited to a rally at the Crystal Palace Football Club ground, where Billy Graham, a well-known Christian speaker, would be speaking, and I asked if I could go as well. I wanted to go not because I thought that anything he was going to say was important to me. It's just that I'd heard he was a motivating speaker, and I wanted to hear him. But the Lord had his own agenda, and Sandy and I both went forward and became Christians together and started regularly attending Purley Baptist Church. I've often been asked what Billy Graham said that convinced me to get up and go with Sandy and many others and make that commitment to follow Jesus. But I can't point to any one thing. I think it was simply his sincere and heartfelt explanation of the life and death of Jesus that made him real to me. Not just a figure from history who I knew about already, but someone who gave his life for me so that I could be forgiven for all the things I'd done wrong in my life, make a fresh start, and live knowing more of him. We'd been attending at Purley Baptist Church for about 3 years when we were invited to become members. And one Sunday morning in 1993, the minister invited us up to the front of the church to be formally welcomed into membership. And then that afternoon, I was 25 feet up a tree in the back garden of our house, reducing the height of a conifer, when I fell out. I landed on my back and immediately lost all feeling in my legs, and I suspected straight away that I could be permanently paralysed. An ambulance took me to the local hospital, where I was in intensive care for a couple of weeks. Apparently, I could have died, but fortunately, no one actually told me this at the time, and I had no notion it was that serious, so I just lay back and waited to get better. Whilst there, I was regularly visited by a physiotherapist who I'd never met before, but who was Christian, and he brought me tapes of worship songs from the Kensington Temple where he worshipped, and even a Sony Walkman to play it on, as we didn't own one. Friends from church also gave me tapes of worship songs and the weekly church services. I found it a great source of strength and inspiration whilst I was lying motionless on the bed. Needless to say, the accident was a severe test of my faith. And yes, there were times when I would question how he could let this happen to me. But I took great comfort from knowing God was with me through it all, and I would soon pick myself up again. Transferred to the National Spinal Injury Centre at St Mandeville, I stayed for 5 months, and many church members visited me, despite the two-hour journey. It could have been easy to feel isolated from God at this time, were it not for the regular visits from friends and their supply of tapes of worship songs and the weekly church service. As well as the spiritual uplifting I felt, the Lord provided for me in the very practical matter of raising money I needed following my disablement. Large numbers of friends from the church rallied around, helping to finance the adaptations needed with generous donations. I really don't know what we'd have done without the support of the church family. Am I dropping out? Many people remarked how normal I seemed to be despite how the accident left me. I was still the same old Merv, as more than one friend remarked, and I think this was because I had the confidence that the Lord knew me, and I just had to put my trust in him in all things, and my life would be the best possible as a result. There was a comfort in knowing he was there, and I was not on my own when all the visitors had left. I'm so glad I finally took that step of faith at the Billy Graham Rally, and it was faith, not reasoning, that led me to that point. Whilst I'd always believed in God and been quite happy to occasionally go to church, I suppose I felt there was no need for any further commitment until Billy Graham talked about the difference it could make to my life. There are still times that, as an engineer who analyzes everything, I struggle to understand many aspects of Christianity. Sometimes you have to accept not everything can be understood by earthly reasoning. But if you do as I did, just ask Jesus to come into your life, you will find he will make a difference to you too.
Thank you very much for sharing that. That was great. Let me help you down. Yes, so the title of the whole Festival of Faith has been What's the Difference? And what a great way to end Mervyn's story of how Christ has sustained and kept him even through that trial. We're going to hear a song that Mervyn's asked for the band to play for us. It's called Servant King, and it speaks of Jesus as the one who comes to serve. And in some ways, if we've thought about it before, it doesn't surprise us, but it should, that the God who made this universe would come into this world in order to serve rather than be served. Have a listen to the song as it tells the story, and perhaps as we do that, the next person could get mic'd up for our interview.
From heaven you came, helpless babe. Entered our world, your glory veiled. Not to be served, but to serve. And give your life that we might live. This is our God, the servant king. He calls us now to follow him, to bring our lives as a daily offering of worship to the servant king. There in the garden of tears, my heavy load he chose to bear. His heart with sorrow was torn. Yet not my will, but yours, he said. This is our God, the servant king. He calls us now to follow him, to bring our lives as a daily offering of worship to the servant king. Come see his hands and his feet, the scars that speak of sacrifice, hands that flung stars into space, two cruel nails surrendered. This is our God, the servant king. He calls us now to follow him, to bring our lives as a daily offering of worship to the servant king. So let us learn how to serve, and in our lives enthrone him, each other's needs to prefer. For it is Christ we're serving. This is our God, the servant king. He calls us now to follow him, to bring our lives as a daily offering of worship to the servant king.
Mervyn's changed. This is Trish. This is Trish. She's going to be telling us a little bit about her story. Trish, thank you so much for being willing to sit up here. People know you better than they know me, of course. But tell us a little bit about you, first of all, family, how you come to be here in Crowborough, that sort of thing.
Okay. I'm Trish. I'm married to John. I have two children, 21 and 23, a girl and a boy. We've been in Crowborough for about 25 years now, and we came here really because house prices were a bit cheaper and we wanted to start a family in those days.
Yeah, well, it's great. It's lovely to have you here.
And my whistling, by the way, do you want me to
What's
use that?
What's the mic like? Let's go for this.
Okay. There we are.
Don't.
It's okay.
Yeah.
But do you want me to stick with this?
Okay. So you're not tempted to lick that anymore, so I'll put that down. Now, Trish, can you tell us a little bit about life before you became Christian, growing up?
Yep. When I was very young, from as long as I can remember, my family life was very turbulent. I was an only child. I have two sisters since, but that's another story. I was an only child, and it felt very lonely, very scary. I didn't really feel it was sort of a just general family life that other people had. And as a result of that, I used to go and stay with friends or family at weekends and in holidays. And that was kind of nice because I got to play with their kids. But underneath it all, you know, mum and dad weren't there, and I felt quite insecure and relied on these other families to very sweetly take me under their wing, really.
And one of those was quite significant in you becoming a Christian, wasn't it?
Absolutely,
Tell us how that worked.
My GP and his wife were a lovely couple. As far as we knew, they were just a lovely couple, but the wife had met my mum in the changing rooms when I did ballet as a four-year-old and had seen that there were problems in the family and had volunteered to take me at weekends and holidays and kind of look after me, let me play with her daughters. I didn't know that they were Christians, but I knew they went to church, and they would often say, "Trishy, we're going to..." That's what people call me in my family, Trishy. They would say, "We're going to church this morning. You don't have to come, but you're very welcome to come with us." So sometimes I went with them and sometimes I didn't, but it wasn't very often that I went with them. But there was still something that I thought, "Oh, there's such security here, and I'm not sure what it is. Something very special about them." Mm. And in fact, as Mervyn was saying, I also went to a couple of sort of big missions, a little bit like this is a small mission, of a festival of celebrating the Christian faith. And I heard people giving stories just like my own now and thinking, yeah, that's just like Margie and Bri. There's just something that's so dear to them that I've not seen in my own family before.
So how old were you when you sort of first started trusting Christ?
Well, when I moved away from home, I literally just dropped into a church close to where I was living, and because I just thought, well, this will be a nice thing to do. Margie and Bri do this. And a supergirl, Sally, who was similar age to myself, befriended me instantly, and she was good-humoured and friendly, but mostly really, really cared for me. And again, it was like somebody was putting their arm around me and saying, I'll look after you, I'll kind of show you the way. That was really good. But Sally had a really, really strong faith in Jesus, and I could see that. I could see that she was secure in her knowledge of Christ and God, and at this point I really didn't understand any of it, but I liked what I saw, and so I kept going along, and Sally encouraged me. She was also a person who I could ask those difficult questions, and I never felt stupid. And neither should we feel stupid in asking questions, because what sort of friend is that? Sally kept encouraging me. And I suppose I thought, after a couple of years of this friendship, that I was a Christian. I was going to church. I was singing all the right hymns. I was thinking about God quite a lot. I did read the Bible with other people, like little Bible studies. But it was one particular day, and I can only testify to you from my own experience, I just knew I hadn't given every single part of my life to Jesus. I'd said yes to going to the church, and yes to the hymns, and yes to the listening to the sermons, but I hadn't actually said, you know, I need to give my life completely to this man that died for me. I need to be obedient, and actually, there are areas that I'm not. And sweet Elizabeth Buck reminded me last night that one of the areas was... she didn't know me then, by the way, but she reminded me that it's quite a funny story now, if you know me now, but I used to swear so badly because that's all I'd known growing up, and I mean badly. And that was one of the things that, without any effort, once I'd said to Jesus, "Here I am, all of me is for you," I just noticed there was no need for it to trip off my lips anymore. It's just something I noticed about myself. I'm not swearing anymore. What's this?
It's very helpful. and that's helpful, because over the week we've been hearing about how when we trust Christ, the Spirit of God comes to actually give us new life and change us. And so sometimes, like that, almost imperceptibly, suddenly things change. But things weren't always that easy for you. You know, it's one thing to give yourself wholly to Jesus, but it doesn't mean everything's going to go smoothly. So tell us a little bit about how your Christian faith has helped you since then.
Well, as quite a few people here will know, we have a beautiful and wonderful daughter who has autism, and as she was growing up, this has been a really, really tricky time, because she is not only a gorgeous girl and very intelligent, far more intelligent than me, but she just doesn't appear autistic, and it's meant many, many challenges. And at times I have... she will know I'm saying this tonight, but, you know, we've both struggled. We've all struggled in the family in a big, big way. And it's so easy if you're a mum or a dad with a child with a disability to think, here we are, we're isolated. You know, she didn't get invited to lots of birthday parties and things. After a while, people stopped inviting her. School was difficult, so I home-educated from 13. You start to feel isolated, but do you know, in even the hardest of times when I've been just, we've all been reduced to tears in the house, I'm sure you've also experienced that at some point or other, you know, I can go to my room and just know that the Lord Jesus is there. He's there. And again, I can only testify to this. It's a little bit like when you were upset as a kid and you were taking those gaspy breaths when you were like that, if anybody remembers being like that. And suddenly a grandmother or somebody puts their arms around you and hugs you and says, come on, lovely, that's okay. And I can just feel God just ministering to me like that. And I think that's God's spirit as well. He does the most odd things sometimes that you just don't expect, because he is alive. Jesus is alive. God is real. God is alive. I can only sit and testify.
Thank you, Trish. We'd love to hear more. Unfortunately, we're on a little bit of a time schedule, but Trish is around, as is Mervyn, as is Tom afterwards, so do chat a bit more. But thank you so much for sharing with us, Trish. Shall we give a round of applause? And the doctor is going to change his incarnation again, because Tom's going to come up and sit here. I've become Tom. Have you got a mic? Great. Give Tom a round of applause as he comes up. This is Tom McDowell. It's been lovely for me sitting in Costa the other day, actually, meeting up with these three over cups of coffee and getting to know them. Tom, it's great to see you here. You've been here for how long in Crowborough?
About 5 years.
About 5 years. Yeah. Married?
Yeah. Kids. I live in Five Ashes. Married, yeah. Three kids, three lovely kids, Zach, Erin and Hannah, and my wife, Kelly.
Yeah. So
we've been together 14 years. So.
Great. Good to hear. Now, you grew up as part of a church in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
You joined the Royal Marines.
Yeah.
How long were you in the Royal Marines for?
6 years.
I got it a bit wrong in the cafe, by the way. I had to be corrected. So you joined the army. No, John, I joined the Royal Marines, part of the Navy, just to clarify that.
Yeah.
Where did you serve?
I served in Iraq and Northern Ireland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what happened when you left the Marines.
It was quite a shock. Coming into what we would know as Civvy Street. I noticed quite quickly that I'd developed quite a drinking habit, which I hadn't really thought was a problem until then. The first job that I got when I left the Marines was a site manager for a London construction company, and my first day I went to their head office, picked up my laptop and was given the site address and told, go there and meet your boss. Went there to meet my boss, but he wasn't there. And there was like a trades foreman type guy there, and there's a couple of other people, and it was 2 o'clock, and I said to him, should we go to the pub? And he thought I was completely nuts. This was like a Monday. And I thought it was absolutely normal to go to the pub at that time.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was used to. We would quite run, have some classes in the afternoon, and then by 2-3 o'clock every day, you would go to the pub.
Yeah. And having been brought up in a church, you weren't following Christ at this time, really, were you? And you know, you'd reacted a bit strongly against that in Iraq.
Yeah.
And where did this all head then? What was sort of rock bottom for you? Because things got quite bad, didn't they?
Yeah, I am. My drinking got completely out of hand to the point where I... it was around the time of the 24-hour drinking, and the alcoholic in me blamed that as being the reason, that if it wasn't for 24-hour drinking, I'd be fine. I wasn't making it home in the evenings. I was lying to my wife, telling her I had late meetings and I may as well stay in London and all the rest of it. And actually, I was drinking and got to the stage where it was almost a race for the cash machine as soon as I got paid, because I would take out huge amounts of money so that I would have enough to drink. And so I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I did manage to stop drinking on and off. I would get 3 months here, or even a year at one time. And then, but that became the next addiction. It was almost how good a sober person can I be? I would sit in a room full of other people in AA and think, I'm better than him because he's only been sober a couple of weeks. But I'm not quite as good as him because he's been sober for 5 weeks. And that was the illness that kind of ran through my whole life, this constant trying to, I don't know, fill a hole.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so we're thinking this week and this evening about the fact that Jesus is risen, so he's no longer dead, he is alive, he's still at work. Mm. Now, the striking thing here is that actually you'd had the privilege of being raised in the knowledge of Christ, but had strongly rejected that. You'd gone off, you'd done your own thing, you'd made a mess of it, you were still thinking, well, I'm better than the next person. You know, we wouldn't imagine Jesus would have time for someone like that. So tell us a little bit about how Jesus then intervened and brought you through this.
Well, my wife and I split up because she couldn't put up with any more of the emotional abuse that I was putting her through. And I ended up in Crowborough in a one-bedroom flat down on Western Road. That was in 2011. And I could do everything I thought I wanted to do. I could drink when I wanted. I could go and play rugby when I wanted. I could do whatever. And very, very quickly, I realized that I was never so empty. My brother had always known that I'd been into music, and I'd listened to quite heavy metal and things like that, and it maybe wasn't the healthiest type of music to listen to. I was always very, very drawn to lyrics, and I would sit down and read the lyrics and think, what's this mean? And anyway, he sent me a link to some Hillsong music, and I found a song called I Surrender, and that song really, it's quite emotional even thinking about it, but that song was very, very powerful. And I continued drinking, and my hangovers were horrendous. I had such hangovers that I honestly thought I would die in that flat. And I didn't really care. I would just have palpitations, my heart would be beating, and I wouldn't be able to stand up. But I switched on UCB radio because I wanted to find more of this music, and the flat just filled with this peace. Mm-hmm. And that kind of became my church for a while. It was Sunday afternoon listening to UCB. And then I started to go up to London, to church in London, and the first time I walked into a Hillsong church there, there was a big sign on the wall saying, "Welcome home." And I knew, I didn't want to admit, but I knew that this was home. I couldn't run any longer. And a few months later, I was back in Ireland. I'd been coming here to All Saints on a few of the weeks and going to London and trying to find out more about church, because it was a lot different than the church I'd been brought up in. My mum invited me to church at Easter, Easter 2012, and the Pastor McConnell was speaking on Simon of Cyrene, carrying Jesus' cross, and I can't really remember what the message was or anything.
It was an encouragement for preachers, that one.
Yeah, I honestly can't remember what he was speaking on, but at the end they had quite a long, what I know now as an altar call.
That's when you're sort of asked whether you're going to commit.
Yeah, it was a different altar call than I've seen since. It was the whole congregation were just singing and praying, and during that moment I'd kind of had I guess, a vision or a flashback to my times in the Marines. And when you're in the military, you spend a lot of time out on patrol, and for hours and hours and hours, all you see is the guy's backpack in front of you. And that's all you see for hours. So that image came into my head, and I could see this backpack. And then I was looking down at his feet, and it was this man's bare legs with blood running back down the back of them, and I knew that it was Christ. And I couldn't not put my hand up. I knew I needed to be saved. I knew my life was a complete mess, and that I was not a very good driver in my own life. So, yeah.
So you entrusted yourself to
him.
Yeah. Yeah. Tom, it's great for us hearing that. I know there's a lot more that you could say. Mm-hmm. I know that your mum was hugely significant, which is actually an encouragement for parents here. Mm-hmm. She kept praying for you in Iraq. She encouraged you in the things of the faith. And what a joy for her to see you return. Yeah. And there must have been a lot of times where she just kept trusting and kept praying and persevering. Yeah. And I know as well you've experienced the Lord very powerfully at work in the business world as well. And I encourage Steve to get you up for this. Where will you be at this time tomorrow, one service, to hear a little bit about that, because that's a great testimony as well. Yeah. But you're going to sing something for us now. Do you want to say anything about the song you're going to sing for us?
Yeah, so this song started out, I started to write songs, and I just want to quickly encourage parents here as well. My mum, I only found out last year when I started to write songs, and I shared a couple with her, and she took me into her bedroom and she got her Bible out and she said, "Son, I want you to see this." And she pulled this photograph out. Now, back when I was about 18, there was a photograph of me at a campfire with my guitar and a big case of Carlsberg beer beside me. And my mum, being my mum, had cut the beer out of the photograph and put it in her Bible, and I had prayed for God to use my gifts for his glory someday. And if you knew how far away I was, you would really see the miracle in the conversations I was having with my mum, telling her, "Don't be ridiculous, God doesn't exist." So for her to keep praying. Mm-hmm. And she also knew when to not preach as well. There got to a time where she's since told me she had to go, "God, I don't know what to do." Yeah. So this song started as a... The first verse was a prayer. And actually, it's the realization through the song then that actually, God is the only thing that can satisfy. And that, you know, that journey, whenever we ask him for things, is, for me, it's been absolutely amazing. And I just encourage you, Christians or non-Christians, to give every single part of your life to him. I love what Trish said about I'd realised I'd maybe not given everything, and you have to give him everything. And he's faithful.
Yeah.
He's faithful.
Great. So, do play for us.
Yeah. So.